From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Well, our connection for this hour was made well over a decade ago, almost two decades ago, when the first discussions were held to create a Renaissance Square in Rochester. The Jewel would be a performing arts center, a couple of thousand seats, more than 100 events in a year. Of course, that idea fell apart years ago now, but attached to the performing arts center was the concept of a brand new downtown transit center, a covered, warm home for buses and riders, more room and better infrastructure. And while the theater dream is gone, the transit center is happening. In fact, the scheduled opening November 28th of this year, a $50 million facility mostly funded by federal tax dollars, the 30-bus base could accommodate up to 100 buses per hour. But the changes don't stop there. Rochester and other local towns, including Farmington, Canandaigua, maybe others, could soon be home to public bike sharing programs. Bike sharing has come to many other cities, larger cities, with mixed results. We'll talk about that. And we're even going to talk about van pooling, a rather new idea that some cities have experimented with, and Rochester might be looking at van pooling as well. So are these good investments? Is Western New York changing to favor public transportation and sort of hybrid transportation projects? We're exploring all of that this hour with three people well-positioned to answer our and your questions. Danielle Cole-Gonzalez is the COO of RGRTA. Danielle, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Bill Carpenter, the CEO of the Rochester Genesee Regional Transportation Authority. Nice to see you, Bill.
Glad to be with you, Evan.
And Rich Perrin is also here. He's with the Genesee Transportation Council for more than a decade, we were just saying. Nice to see you here, Rich.
Thanks very much, Evan.
Let's start with the basic timetable and make sure that we're all square on where things stand with the downtown transit center. And by the way, for our listeners, if you want to jump in, and a lot of you already have on our social media, on Facebook and Twitter, or you can call us at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Where does construction stand, and are we on track to open before the end of the year, Bill?
Hey, Evan, we're 5 months ahead of schedule to open the Transit Center. We're going to open November 28th, Black Friday, this year. 83% of the construction is done. We're busy at our campus on East Main Street getting all the systems ready so that when we open it, it'll seem like this is the way Rochester has always experienced bus service.
All right, so Main and Clinton, and you know, I go back to when we heard so much about the plans for Renaissance Square. There doesn't, and the video on the RGRTA website essentially says the same. That transit center piece has stayed close to the same. Nothing is always the exact same from start to finish of a decade or two-decade project, but that's pretty close to what we've been hearing for years, isn't it?
It's very close. There was one point that the transit center was going to be underground, but that changed almost a decade ago, and since then, really the designers did a beautiful job getting the concrete and the brick and the look of it to fit in with the neighborhood. It's a beautiful addition to that neighborhood.
And what's the size we're talking about here? Give us a sense for what's it going to look like.
It's 450 feet long. It spans the entire block along Mortimer Street from St. Paul to Clinton. 87,000 square feet on the inside. It's if you can envision a large airport terminal. The ceilings are 40 foot high. It's 60 feet wide in the center, so people will come in. The bus will let them off. They'll walk into a climate-controlled, air quality-controlled facility with restrooms, customer service staff, security. There'll be 30 of those bus bays available for people transferred to their next bus. Biggest difference between the transit center and the airport terminal is you don't have to wait long for your next vehicle.
And $50 million, you know, we're talking to Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RGRTA, who is a budget guy through and through, and so you're a good person to ask this question to. How close to the initial projected costs, and I know you weren't with RGRTA back in the beginning of this process, but how close to the initial projected cost is it, and how much have you been able to make sure that it has stayed on budget?
So for the last 5 years, we've been working with essentially the same number, and we designed the facility to work within the numbers that we had. We broke ground a year ago, November. The contract team and our project team have stayed within that budget. As I said, we're 83% of the way through construction. We're at about 80% of spend identified, which is a good place to be, a little bit under budget at this point. And what that means when we get down to what are some of the customer amenities that we'd like to add, we'll have a few extra dollars, some of the better finishes, some more signage for customers, really make it a great experience for our customers.
80% paid for by the federal government. At least we heard for years that the federal government would be the big piece, and it still has been.
Of the $50 million, 80%, $40 million, has been funded by the federal government, $5 million by the state government, And our GRTA has a local share of $5 million.
Okay. So, again, as you heard from Bill Carpenter, they're still on track for Black Friday opening. Danielle Cole Gonzalez, why Black Friday? Why did our GRTA want that day?
It's important that we launch, have a soft opening. This is going to be a real change, not only for the community, but for all the people that work at RTS as well. So really making sure that we have an opportunity to kind of give people a chance when they're not really as busy as they normally would be on a regular day. Maybe they don't have to work. Maybe there is no school that day. And really give people an opportunity to try it out. We will be doing a lot of that in advance in terms of education and having open house type events for customers. But really for opening day, to really be as much of an opportunity for people to look around. I mean, it's really just going to be a beautiful place as well. And if you're in a hurry, you're not going to have a chance to really get the layout and get the feel and ask questions. So we decided that day would really give that opportunity.
I'm curious to know what our listeners think is going to happen down at Main and Clinton and if this will have a revitalizing effect in that area or if it will have just sort of a neutral effect or what you think. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Our GRTA's job, Danielle, is not to make sure that the rest of the area is revitalized. If that happens, great. But you're making sure that you're on budget, you're on time, the buses are there, it's comfortable for the riders. But do you have any expectation that it will have an effect on the area around it?
We do. We know that having public transportation that's easy to access, that's something that people can understand where to go to catch the bus, that we play a role in that. We play a role in providing that transportation access. And we also play a role in decongesting Main and Clinton and St. Paul as well. So we do play a role in how downtown is accessed, how it functions. And we know that the Transit Center will have a positive impact on that.
You talk about decongestion. I was reading the numbers essentially cribbed from you guys on what it's going to look like and how it will function. But 30 bus bays, potentially 100 runs, 100 buses an hour, a pretty steady flow of traffic. But give me a sense for what it looks like and how it will impact or help alleviate congestion then.
Well, we've also made some service changes as well in terms of the timings of our schedules and the timings of the buses and how they come in and out because we have that opportunity with the Transit Center. And so, we definitely have mapped out timings to make sure that we'll be able to facilitate constant movement and have consistent frequency of service where it needs to go. One of the things that will help with that for sure is the two-way conversions of both St. Paul and North Clinton downtown, and that's going to have a significant impact on that.
And Bill, I don't want to ask you a softball question, but I have to ask you at least how you think RGRTA and this project has stayed within or under budget when so many big public projects, public-private projects, projects of that ilk have struggled to stay in budget, or year to year all of a sudden cost estimates change. What's happened here? What have you learned from this project?
Evan, it's a great question. We've really gone around the country to find other transit centers to see how they've been done. We've put together a great project team. We take for granted what great contractors we have, both Pike and LaChase, on our team to help build this. Bergman is the architect design firm. So they've put together a great plan for it to stay on budget. Miguel Velasquez is the executive sponsor. He's our chief information officer at the authority. But he makes things hum for this project for us. We've had some favorable conditions with the weather, mm-hmm. But it's really that project team that has taken all the things that you can't control, manage them as well as they can, and then they understand that CEO's a numbers guy. We're not going to finish over budget.
Yeah.
We'll come in
yeah.
under budget, and we'll provide again, the customers some additional amenities with the dollars left over.
I imagine that when you're in the early stages of these kind of projects, it's important not to under-project either for convenience or selling the project to the public, and it at least appears in this case that didn't happen. But what are some of the things that can happen in the course of construction and getting to that finish line that can inflate the cost that you've been able to avoid? What are the lessons you've said, we're not going to let this happen here?
Getting into the ground initially, there was some issues with the soil. It wasn't regular dirt. It was looks like coal ash from the old BB power plant. So we had some initial added costs, added about 5% to the initial costs. And then we went through the project and said, what do we need to do to stay within budget? It's really just good management, understanding that we've got a fixed budget, and we stay within it. And again, the management of the team, this has a guaranteed maximum price is the way we did the contract. So the contractor doesn't get to turn overruns to us. He has to deal with those overruns. So it's a very good government discipline on how a project can be done.
263-WXXI, 263-9994, because we're talking about not only the transit center that will be done and on schedule for a Black Friday, November 28th opening this year, but we're going to be talking about some other possible projects as well. We're going to be talking about van pooling, which is sort of a new way of carpooling. We're going to learn about that. We're going to be talking about bike sharing in a moment with Rich Perrin as well. But I want to make sure we stick with just the particulars to stay on top of what's going on with the transit center. And so much of the interest in this project is predicated on need and predicated on ridership. And it wasn't long ago that RGRTA put out a news release looking at a series of data that says Rochester ridership's on the way up. So let me start with Danielle and ask, why do we say that Rochester, how do you know that Rochester ridership's on the way up, and who are the people who are taking the bus now?
Well, we know it because we measure it. We track it. It's something that we watch very closely. And, you know, we have a team of planners, and we also work with GTC for planning, and we stay on top of what the community looks like, where our major employment centers are, where do people go. And we see a variety, and I know Bill will chime in too, but we see a variety of people now starting to use transit, use public transit. It's not just the folks you've seen before. Because we've aligned our service with some major employment centers, we've really made it a point to understand where do people want to go, where do people need to go, and we've made several changes, several initiatives to putting service there. And so when you build that opportunity, people can then build their lives around that and choose to use public transportation.
Give me an example of tying it to an employment center.
Rochester Tech Park is a good example of that. We've made some changes to some of our routes to add more frequency to that, because there are employers there that have requested that and people who use it on a regular basis. So that has driven some of the changes to routes in that area.
Before we delve into that a little bit more, let's grab our first caller. Tim in Avon is on the line with us. Thanks for calling Connections, Tim.
Hi, Evan. Two quick questions. One is I literally just dropped one of my college kids off in Buffalo last night to catch Megabus for Cincinnati. And so one thing would be I'd love to see Rochester have a Megabus stop, and is that a possibility? But the other thing is, how about access for departures and arrivals, people dropping off and parking access? I think those are such key issues around a transportation center, and I'm just interested. So I'm going to hang up and listen for the answer.
Yeah, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. You want to start, Bill? Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Tim. My wife and two of my sons just took the Megabus that is on East Avenue near Gibbs Street down to New York City. They paid $1 on the way down, $11 on the way back. Great, safe, fun transportation, free wireless. It was a great trip. So Rochester does have that. As far as access for departures and arrivals, the inner city bus station in downtown Rochester has a nice parking lot. For the transit center, people who are arriving typically by bus, it's going to be a very comfortable place, an environment where they can get their questions answered, where they can use a restroom, where they can pick up a snack, be on the next bus. Very easy to get in and out of the transit center.
We are also next to Mortimer Street Garage as well, and we will have access, and we will indicate where people can drop people off who will be using the transit center, but that's not the main focus, is not having a parking area dedicated to the transit center.
You going to sell coffee there, Bill?
We will have a way for people to get coffee, probably at the store around the
I'm
corner from the
pragmatic.
Transit center.
Yeah. I'm just being pragmatic. Danielle was nodding there, too. Of course, you've got young twins. She understands why we would ask that kind of a question. Now, on the issue of ridership, on who is riding the bus, we did have a comment on WXXINews.org from a news commenter named Lester Wilson. Here's what Lester wrote, and I'd like to get Danielle and Bill's feedback on this. He says, don't drink the RGRTA PR Kool-Aid. The sharp increase is largely due to Rochester City School student transportation changing from contracted yellow school buses by a private company to a subsidy agreement the district entered into with RTS. In addition, some increases can be seen with the assumption of intra-campus busing for area colleges from college-owned shuttle buses to RGRTA-owned buses, again, under a subsidy agreement. The only real change here is who owns the vehicle and pays the driver. Travel habits have largely stayed the same in Rochester. Is that wrong?
Well, the study that came out in December when we announced our increased ridership showed there were fewer vehicle miles being driven. So there are people choosing to use a bus. Danielle mentioned earlier about re-engineering how we do things. The Route 10, the Dewey Avenue area, and then the Walmart that opened a year ago, August, our ridership was full at 5,000 customers per day. We said, let's add a little bit more service. It went to 5,800 per day. We had a little bit more service. It went to 7,000 customers per day. What we're finding when we plan where people are coming from and where they're going, the ridership does increase. This year, we're seeing 500,000 more customers with us this year. The school district enrollment is down. So while this writer may have said, that your listener may have said, it's because of these other contracts. In fact, included in our totals of increasing 530,000 riders this year is a reduction with the city school district because their enrollment is down a little bit.
Dollar a ride, is that sustainable for a while?
We've committed with our board. They've approved the comprehensive plan, our strategic plan. The dollar fare will remain in place through 2015. We'll evaluate it again this time next year.
And what do other cities do for riders? How does a dollar a ride compare, Bill?
In the upstate cities, it's $1.50, in some cities $2, and others downstate it's $2.50 for a ride. We have a business model where we work with partners, business partners, those destinations that want us to extend our routes. And we have a private sector mindset. We will build our route structure with the federal money we have and the customer fare we have. And then when a specific business benefits, then we'll extend that infrastructure and they become our revenue partner. So that the customer pays a dollar, everyone in the community through taxes pays something, but when a business specifically benefits from it, they pay the marginal increased cost. We've got over 60 of those partnerships in place at this point. We actually get more revenue from those partnerships than we do from the dollar fare.
We're talking about how transportation is changing in Rochester and some of the big projects coming up, not the least of which is the new Transit Center opening in November. If you're just joining us, Bill Carpenter is the CEO of the Rochester Genesee Regional Transportation Authority. Danielle Cole-Gonzalez is the COO of RGRTA. Rich Perrin's also here. We're going to be talking to him in just a moment. He's with the Genesee Transportation Council. And your comments as well about what you're going to see downtown, what you'd like to see downtown, and the way transportation may be changing. We'd love to hear from you on how you get around, how you get to work. Are you more likely to take the bus, especially in perhaps a warmer, nicer facility as we're going to see on Main and Clinton? And Danielle, when you talk to people who are on the fence about taking the bus, do you expect this new transit center to move the ridership even higher? What are the expectations?
We absolutely do, and I think the other piece of it is having the transit center is going to allow us to make some changes to the service schedules that are easier to understand, that are on, you know, more on the hour, more on time frames that make sense, that people can more easily learn. And it is about where you catch the bus. Many people have apprehensions about knowing where to get the right bus in order to use transit, and we're taking that question away. People will just know where to go, and we do know that will make it easier for people. If we make the system easier for people, then more people will ride.
Is RGRTA operating under any sort of an expectation of ridership in 2015 that'll be based on the new transit center bill?
What we've learned, Evan, is the first 3 to 6 months after a change like this, ridership actually goes down just a little bit. Some people want to understand what the change is. In Des Moines, Iowa, where we've spent quite a bit of time studying what they're doing there, a little bit smaller market than us, but very similar, their ridership a year after opening was up 12% month over month. So a drop initially, but very significant increases once people get used to all the changes and they find this is a great way to get around.
And so are you going to do you plan to budget for that?
We will.
Are you budgeting conservatively?
We will budget conservatively.
Yeah, fair to say. Yeah. We are due for a break, and we're going to come back and talk about bike sharing. And if you don't know what bike sharing is, we're going to learn all about that and what might come to Rochester. We're in the early stages of taking a look at that. We're also going to talk about van pooling. If you're someone who would love to carpool to work, but you just can't make it work with your friends around you for various reasons, there might be a new idea coming our way, and we're going to learn about that and break a little news on this Monday afternoon. You're listening to Connections with Evan Dawson on member-supported public radio. All right, welcome back to Connections on this Monday afternoon. And before we get to bike sharing, Danielle Cole Gonzalez from RGRTA wanted to make sure we cover the possibility or the eventuality of service changes when the new transit center opens. What do you want riders or potential riders to know?
What we want people to know is that what we've done is use the transit center opening as an opportunity to really take a look at the frequency of this service and where people are going with our city routes in particular. And over time, people have noticed, okay, you've got a big 60-foot bus on Park Avenue every 20 minutes, and there doesn't seem to be anyone on it because that Park Avenue bus goes over and does the Lake Avenue side later and ends up being very full, and we need it to run every 20 minutes. So what we've been able to do is use the transit center as an opportunity to right-size the service where it needs to be. And so people will see that and understand that now you'll see the right size of bus on Park Avenue at the right amount of times, and we'll be able to put more of those big buses at a more frequent time on Lake Avenue as an example. So people can expect to see that along with schedules that just seem to align more reasonably with what people can understand.
And where, if they've got questions about routes and schedules, where do you want them to go?
We're going to have customer service right in the transit center.
Right there in the transit
center. Right in the transit center.
And I'm sure the website will cover a lot of that as well.
Absolutely.
263-WXXI, 263-9994. Rich Perrin from Genesee Transportation Council is here, and we're talking about bike sharing. You might have seen an article in the Democrat and Chronicle just a few months ago talking about how there is going to be, at least as far as I know, Rich, a study about what bike sharing is. So before we even get to what could happen here, let's ask the basic question, what is bike sharing? What does it mean?
Sure. Bike sharing systems are programs that make it easier for people to conveniently access bicycles for all types of trips. And the way they do that is essentially they're a membership program with strategically located stations where the bikes are. And people can then go out and basically, using their membership, access a bicycle for when they need it, how long they need it, and use it without having to have ownership of the bike per se. And one of the real benefits is that it extends the reach of other services like public transportation by having a longer last mile. I know that doesn't really make sense, but it is a longer last mile than if people were to just walk. So by strategically placing those stations around other services, activity centers, and the like, people now have the ability to use a bicycle without either having to have their own or bring their own in the event that they do.
All right. And so now, where do things stand with this? What's coming next?
Sure. And I think it's important to take a step back and remember that this is all part of a much larger initiative that we have in general for all modes of transportation, whether it's highways and bridges, public transportation, or bicycle and pedestrian. And that's that any opportunity we have to provide safer, more reliable, affordable options, we want to take. And so bike sharing is one of those potential opportunities that we want to investigate. And it's really important to note what we're doing is a feasibility study. And we've been very clear about that. We're not saying we have to have bike sharing for Rochester and Monroe County and the outer areas. What we're saying is let's get the right people together. Let's ask the right questions. And in short, what is the best business strategy to fund, set up, and operate a successful bike sharing system? And once we've done that, let's see if it's something that we feel is important to make an investment in, if need be. Some cases, it's very clear, you know, people will say, well, the private sector, if it was, you know, viable, they would do it. You know, my response to that is when people like what we do, they say we make an investment in it. We make an investment in highways and bridges, but we subsidize all that other stuff. Well, the reality is that based on travel trends and what we saw with Rochester being the eighth fastest growing place for the percent of workers who bike to work from 2000 to 2011, this may be an investment that's going to be worthwhile for us to make. It may have that return on investment that says this is something the community can have and should have because people are going to use it. And that's a big part of this study is figuring out who should operate it and how it should be paid for. But at the end of the day, the first thing we want to do is reach out and say, who are the potential customers and partners? How many bikes and stations are needed? Where should they be located? And then really get into, after we've said this is what would be optimal for us, well, then what does it cost and what are the range of options we might want to look at?
How long could a study take?
I think right now we're just in the initial component of it, which is working with the preferred consultant. We went out and got a nationally recognized expert in this, Tool Design. They've studied bike sharing systems across the country. And one of the benefits we have is that there's currently about 75 bike sharing systems in this country. So we're not the first ones to do it or to take a look at it. But I would say that we're probably somewhere in the range of 12 to 15 months before we have a completed study that says this is a preferred alternative for Rochester. And then we've got to start making that decision about is it worth it?
Follow us on Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter. Jump on Facebook or call us at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'd love to hear from people who either bike or would like to bike or would like to know more about this kind of a program. And we're already seeing some pretty strong views online. And what it's very interesting, as Rich talks about other cities have done it. Fair to say, Rich, it seems like every city, it doesn't look the same in every city. That's why you study it for Rochester. And not just Rochester, by the way. It could be Canandaigua, Farmington, where could it be locally, possibly?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the study will determine. You need a certain density of development and activity because obviously what the distance you can travel in your personal vehicle, automobile, is going to be much longer than the distance you can travel by bike, at least for the average rider. Somebody like me, I can go very far in my car. Bike, if you want me to show up still smelling like I did when I got out of the shower and everything else, you got to be careful about that. But no, you're right. We want to figure out what works for this region. I mean, there are of those 75 systems, you can look at the system in New York City that has about 10,000 bikes to Spartanburg, South Carolina, where there's 14 bikes at two stations. And there's also a difference in where these things or who these things are operated by. You know, about two-thirds, roughly 50 of the systems are municipal or publicly owned, and the remaining third, the other 25 or so, are operated by colleges and universities. So there's a lot of options out there, and I keep using that word because that's what this is about, providing opportunities for healthy and active transportation. But again, successful communities don't look to other communities that are successful and copy their answers. They copy their questions, ask those questions, mm-hmm. and say, what works here?
Joe in Livonia, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, hi. This doesn't deal with bikes, and you might have covered it at the beginning of the program. I wasn't listening, but how come we decided to have a new bus terminal and a new train terminal? Why wasn't it a combination like Syracuse?
Bill, you want to jump in there?
Thanks, Joe, for the question. The funding for the bus terminal was granted to us in the late 90s as part of Renaissance Square. That project has developed an agreement with the city almost 10 years ago for the Mortimer Street block is where it was determined to be. The funding for the train station was a separate initiative, and that funding was granted in the last couple years. So the work for the transit center had already been done. The environmental review, the approvals, the city approvals had all been in place for its location. We are working very closely with the folks in New York State DOT on the design of the train station so that shuttle service can go back and forth between the transit center and the train station. So while it's difficult to pull the two together, you can't move the train tracks, and at this point you can't move the transit center, you can move the people that need to access both facilities, and we'll work well with the train station to make that happen.
That help answer your question, Joe?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to call. We appreciate that. Let's get Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, I could. One of the things I want to say, it will fit into what the previous caller just said. Listen, a lot of us, including me, are big proponents of public transportation, the bike issue. You have to be careful about safety and all that. So I say that because what I'm going to say next is a more critical statement. You know, the depiction of this conversation in terms of the bus barn does not reflect anywhere near. There were four public hearings on this. It wasn't so much that people were against the bus barn, but the caller who just called in hit a question. He may not have been at that public hearing, but there were 200 people plus there, and all but I think one or two were against this plan. Again, not so much the building itself, but the location, because truly an intermodal system, which is what the federal government under Obama decided to do. It was close to the same time this whole thing came up. In other words, you should have transportation that's physically connected in terms of location, that you shouldn't have, you shouldn't need a shuttle to go to whatever. And while I know there's some disagreement perhaps on where that should have been, but one of the places was the train station. But whatever the location would have been, it should have been the intermodal situation should have been a higher priority. In addition to that, the discussion previously seemed to be about the routes and changing routes. Well, there was a lot of feedback on the public hearing about one of the big problems with the transit system is the fact that the hub and spoke system we have, which is still going to be dominant, sounds like, is a tremendous problem for people going across town. And I hope these changes will reflect the fact that a lot of people who live in poor neighborhoods don't have grocery stores, don't have anything, and they need to be able to get to Wegmans and stores without changing their schedule so they only can get there twice a day or something.
Well, let's let Daniel's talked about service schedules. Let's let Daniel make jump in there.
Yeah, when I mentioned the changes, I was not referring to crosstown routes. We actually have crosstown routes. We currently do, and those routes will not transfer in the transit center. They'll continue to do the work that they do now.
Okay. And Bonnie, I appreciate the call. I want to circle back here. Well, let's take one more, and then we'll get back to some of the questions we're getting online about bike sharing. But let's take one more call. This is Harry. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, hi. Regarding the hearings on the bus barn, we get back to John Robert Smith being in Rochester then, advocating for transit-oriented development. So we would know that transit would make retail and other business flourish. Getting back to the lie that was just said about the money was already spent from Mortimer, we had many hearings from the city council, and Lovely Warren made her famous statement, there are no buses in Mississippi, referring to her refusal to listen to John Robert Smith, who runs Reconnect America. So, number one, you could have saved the money. It was wasted to have two transit systems here in Rochester when you needed one intermodal that would have hugely helped to redevelop Rochester. Again, there are no buses in Mississippi is what our mayor's policy.
All right. Thanks for the call, Harry. Bill, you want to respond to that?
I appreciate the background. I joined the Transit Center about 3.5 years ago, and when I came in, we had the funding, we had a location. My job is to execute it. I know there's about 280,000 customers per year that use Amtrak, and Monday through Thursday this week we'll have about 280,000 customers. So I know some of the conversation about where they should be located, people who feel very strongly and passionately about it, and it sounds like they'll continue to feel strongly and passionate about it. I will tell you we've spent about $37 million so far in the transit center where it is now. And we're going to continue to build our bus system around that. We're not going to have a bus barn. We'll have a transit center. And we'll work cooperatively with Amtrak as they continue to try to improve train traffic.
All right, I want to get back to the conversation on bike sharing with Rich Perrin. And Rich, we've had some comments and questions online, people asking, you don't lock the bikes up? I mean, how does this work here? You grab a bike and you take it to the next stop and you drop it off and you hope no one steals it?
No, not at all. The it's not a bike giveaway. It's a bike sharing program. And the way that it works is that the stations themselves actually lock the bikes, and you unlock it using some type of a smart card or your credit card that you've signed up with for the membership. And that way, depending on the pricing structure for it, it will determine how much you're charged. So it may be a prepaid membership. You may pay as you go off of some type of a fixed account like a credit card. But at the end of the day, you come and you swipe your card and it says you took the bike out for 2 hours. So you owe this much. Or you took the bike and you spent 6 hours riding it around doing what you needed to do. And again, these things have been tried out, but no, it's not as if you just get to where you want to go and say, here's where the bike goes. And part of that,
sitting against a tree.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And part of that is also what you have to look at in the system. You may have that you start out in the morning, you're going to need a significant number of bikes at a few stations. And at the end of the day, those bikes may not make it back to those same stations. They may be elsewhere. So part of the program is having a way to pick up the bikes and move them to where they need to be the next day. And a lot of that is what you begin to look at through a feasibility study like this one.
I want to also read a couple comments from our Facebook page. Neil says, I had the pleasure of a subscription to the OV Fiat service in the Netherlands, which was a nationwide program based at public transit points. It was brilliant and inexpensive. Of course, biking is in general is a different ballgame there, but said he loved it. Mark says, bike sharing is one of the final pieces in a larger puzzle. Look at the cities where it works, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, etc. The infrastructure for safe coexistence between riders, drivers, and pedestrians is all in place. Trying to drop a bike share in a city where that element is not mature will lead to a failed bike share program and those pesky government subsidies libertarians like to complain about. This pretty much means it'll never work in the USA. But, Rich, you have said that Rochester gets pretty high ratings for bike-friendly.
Well, it does, and we're hoping it gets better. In 2012, the League of American Bicyclists awarded Rochester the bronze level for bicycle-friendly communities. It's the only bicycle-friendly community in upstate New York, unless someone else has got it within the last 2 years. But like I said, it is part of a larger initiative, and one of the things that we're looking at is developing active transportation plans, community-wide ones that include, obviously, bicycling as a major component. The very first municipality to do that was Penfield, all the way back in, I think, 2008, did a bicycle master plan. The city completed their bicycle master plan. Brighton completed theirs, the most recently completed. Greece is finishing up. We have Chilai and Parrington starting. We've just provided funds for Pittsford, Henrietta, and Brockport to start theirs come April 1. So we're looking at it and saying, no, just providing the bikes isn't enough. We have to have, again, that safe, reliable infrastructure for them to ride on, and those can be bike lanes. But we've also in this community have a national and even to some degree internationally recognized multi-use trail system. We're coming up on 400 miles of multi-use trails, which are really expressways for bicyclists. So those have to be figured into the location of any stations if we deem the program feasible.
I want to listen to a cut, if we could, on bike sharing. Our listeners, especially NPR listeners, might have heard just about 6 weeks ago, Rene Montaigne on Morning Edition interviewed a reporter in Montreal. Montreal had a bike sharing program and still does, but Bixi was the company that they were working with, and things have not gone well there. And we're going to listen to this, and we'll come back and we'll ask Rich just how well they're studying cities like Montreal, New York City, where there have been ups and downs. So let's listen to this from Morning Edition just about 6 weeks ago.
Within a year, the city's auditor general started being concerned that it was spending way too much money and it was going to end up costing taxpayers. Then in 2012, it got embroiled in a legal dispute with the developer of the software that kind of runs the system. Bixi decided, okay, fine, we're going to develop our own new software that'll work in cities like New York and other big cities where we sell it. And there were all kinds of problems. Several cities had to delay their systems. Customers were angry, and it kind of started the ball rolling down the hill, kind of.
I don't bring this up to try to cast a negative sheen on bike sharing. I bring it up because there's been a lot of enthusiasm in Montreal, Chicago, New York City, to varying degrees of success, and the concern that some have is if things don't go well or they're mismanaged, are taxpayers on the hook for it? What are you looking at with other cities, and what lessons do you think there are out there?
Well, I think that's exactly what you want to look at, and I don't think it casts it in a negative light at all. I think it's being realistic and pragmatic. We have to look at things where they've worked, but also where they don't work. Sometimes it's better to ask the question of, or I should say, sometimes it's better to look at instances where things didn't work than when they did work. And you're going to probably get a lot of good lessons learned out of that. I think what's important to note is exactly what the statement was in that clip, which was about the software. You know, if you buy a piece of software and it doesn't work, you don't say, well, I'm going to scrap my computer. You go and you get software that works, because there may be an inherent benefit to having the computer and being able to work on it. If there's inherent benefit to having a bicycle sharing program, then we're going to want to make sure we have a software that has as few glitches as possible. But in the end, this software is being used in D.C. I was just down there. Saw the bike sharing station at Union Station. People coming in, taking out bikes, leaving them there as they hopped on either Amtrak or Metro. It's still being used in New York, 10,000 bikes. So sure, there's some issues. But again, like I said, this is a particular issue with a specific vendor. And there are other vendors out there. They're not the only game in town. You have Social Bicycles, which operates a system that's in Buffalo right now and growing. And there's others out there that we would look at.
So we'll be following that with Rich and the study that's coming up on that. And maybe in 12, 15 months, we'll have more clarity on that. So we'll be following that story. Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RGRTA, is also here to break a little bit of news today. I don't know how much news you're going to break, but Bill and I were talking before the broadcast started, and you spent some time in Des Moines taking a look at vanpooling. We're more familiar with the term carpooling, but Bill, what's vanpooling?
Evan, we went out to Des Moines to take a look at the transit center that they opened about a year and a half ago, and got picked up in a vanpool van. And I asked the driver, what does this sign on the window mean? And Des Moines has about 100 vehicles that they own, but they sit in the driveways of 100 residents of the greater Des Moines area, anywhere from 20 miles away as far as 60 miles away, where you can get 5 to 8 people agree to carpool in a vehicle owned by the transit authority. The person who drives the car, who's responsible for the care, gets a credit card for gas, has a place where it's maintained. The other individuals in the car then pay the full cost for that, which works out to about $60 to $110 per month per customer. And I thought about employment centers we have. We mentioned about Rochester Tech Park. We've got RIT as a large employment center. Xerox Webster, and there's a lot of jobs there that people would like to take public transportation to. It doesn't work well with 40 and 60 foot buses. So we applied to the Genesee Transportation Council and said we would like to study whether vanpooling could work here, so that folks, when we say, hey, we need more service in Hilton, in Churchville, in Avon, in Farmington, we've got a number of people that would like to use public transportation. This, to us, is a way that is much less expensive than owning your own vehicle. That's estimated to be $700, $800 per month. So for $60 to $100 a month, you work it out with the individuals, a lot more flexibility. Whether it will work here or not, we'll have the information probably in 12 to 18 months and then be able to move forward from there.
You're not going to study unless you think there's a chance, though.
Well, again, you take a look at a place like RIT, which has got a goal by 2030 to have a zero carbon footprint. They're using all the space they have for a hockey rink. They're really constrained for space. University of Rochester, the same. So that you've got people that live in suburbia where they're saying, can you get public transportation in density to bring it to this destination? I think vanpooling is a great compromise where the individual would pay a little bit more than taking a bus and a lot less than owning their own car. And then for 5 people or 8 people to share one parking spot makes a big difference for those dense campuses.
Now help me visualize this, Bill, because when I think of piling people in a van, I go back to my camp days on Chautauqua Lake, and we used to pile campers in vans to take them camping to the overnight to the Mayville Gorge. And we had a rusty old van that the door would be mostly closed, and I'm not sure there was an axle fully in place on that thing. And it was a wonderfully fun experience that looked like it was straight out of an 80s movie. Your experience when you were in Des Moines, the quality of the vehicle, and what kind of make are we talking about?
They had a variety of sizes so that 5 people or 8 people, all the kinds of vehicles you'd get for your own family if you needed 5 or 8 people. all well-maintained by dealerships. So the liability for that driver goes back to the transit authority. So they want great equipment. They want people to be safe.
Absolutely.
Whoever has responsibility for the vehicle has to go through a significant amount of training. So it becomes a great way to blend, okay, I'm not ready for the bus and I'm not ready for the bike, but I want to do something more effective and as far as getting to work, something that costs less, that uses less of a carbon footprint. We feel this could be an option we're looking to study.
Not a special kind of license, though, I assume.
Just training.
Just training, okay. Des Moines doing? Anybody else doing van pooling?
We've identified about a dozen communities wow. around the country that are doing it. Charlotte, North Carolina is another one that comes to mind. What you just need is a dense place where people live, a dense place where people work, but not so critical mass that a 40-foot bus would pick everyone up and get them where they need to go.
All right, so now we've got news on bike sharing. Bill's breaking news on van pooling around here. We're going to wrap the hour with just making sure we're square on what's coming up with the Transit Center. November, if you're just joining us this hour, we've been talking about the big project downtown at the corner of Main and Clinton. A Transit Center is going to be opening. What's the official name? I keep calling it the Transit Center. Danielle, is there an official name for the...
That's it. It's the RTS Transit Center.
RTS Transit Center is going to open November 28th, and that is Black Friday. Danielle and Bill, anything that could get in the way during construction or finishing out construction between now and then that could delay the opening?
Well, there's a list, but we won't let it happen.
There's always something, I suppose, that could happen.
I just want to give a shout-out to the city administration. One of the issues is a two-way street conversion that Danielle mentioned earlier. They have really made that a priority so that that can be in place. It's going to make a big difference if our buses can approach a transit center on Clinton and St. Paul from either direction, and appreciate their help in making that happen.
Do we know when that's going to happen?
Their schedule is to have it done by September.
Okay, so that'll be, you'll have a few months head start on that, making sure that's moving smoothly. And did you have to move much to get that? I mean, that's a pretty significant change. In many ways. The city was amenable to it, though.
It's been part of the long-range plan for the city and extending that two-way conversion. This will get it north of Main Street by the time the Transit Center opens, and then they've got plans for south of Main Street that they're working on.
And as Bill said earlier, they've had a very favorable weather throughout the term of construction, which started when? When did construction begin, Bill?
Construction started October a year ago. Last year, we may not remember this, we didn't get a lot of snow and it was very warm. We were just digging dirt in the ground, and that it wasn't frozen like it has been this year made a big difference. They were able to get the building enclosed early December, so the contractors right now are working inside in 60-degree weather, climate-controlled. When our customers get in there, we'll have it at 70 degrees. Great facility, public restroom, security. Did we mention it's a dollar a ride? Still only a dollar a ride.
And let me close the hour with this, because that's good. On Twitter, two quick comments. Sarah writes, changing Rochester's dependence and mentality surrounding cars is crucial to the city's growth and vibrancy. Rochester may not be ready, but it begins with establishing more options. Fear of failure isn't an excuse to stay stagnant. So obviously a lot of optimism about these kind of projects, whether it's van pooling, bike sharing, the transit center we're talking about. And then the other one, Jan says, are we going to see fares go up once the transit center opens? Bill?
Fares will remain a dollar a ride through 2015.
Okay, through 2015. So thank you for taking the time, Bill, with the RGRTA, and as well as Danielle, thank you very much for coming in and answering a lot of questions and getting us up to speed. Barring any events that Danielle says that will not happen, that list is going to be private and it won't matter on November 28th, will it?
No.
Black Friday, the opening there. And Rich Perrin, thanks for keeping us up to date on bike sharing. Very interesting stuff, and we'll talk to all of you again. So thank you, Rich. Thank you, Bill. Danielle, thank you very, very much. Quick break now, and a very different second hour. This is Monday Afternoon on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and you're listening to member-supported public radio.